right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Susnow.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow, and you're tuning in to the Inspire Possibility Show. Every week I have somebody that I have a conversation with, somebody who I've heard about, has come to me, somebody who I find interesting, and I think you will too. I haven't really had a person like this on the show before, somebody who really talks about money. And a lot of us are squeamish when it comes about money. We really don't want to tell people how much we have or what we're working on. It's kind of a secret. And it's mysterious. And we all our whole lives, we have this relationship with money. We want something. We wonder if we have enough to buy it. And it's a constant thing. And no matter how much we have, we always come back to that basic question, and there's always this idea of more. And so the sense is that we don't have a healthy relationship with money. We're always worried about it. And then we get lured by all the mainstream media. We start to have this idea of what success means, and usually with most people, and I'm not saying everybody, and I think a lot of people on the air really have a different relationship with money. But our relationship with money changes all the time. And until we come to make peace with it, become more sensible, then we're going to be at the effect of money. But money can also be, can have magic, can enable us to do things, and it can be very exciting to live in abundance. And there is somebody who is an expert. She wrote a book called Money Magic. She just joined me on the air, and it's really about unleashing your true potential for prosperity and fulfillment. She has the Money Coaching Institute, and Deborah, I think you're on the line. Is that right?
I'm here. How are you, Mark?
All right, welcome. I'm doing good.
Thank you.
I was waiting for you to call in and talk to us about the magic of money. How's that?
I'm ready. Excited to be
here. You're ready? Well, good. I'm glad you are, too. You know, and I really liked your book. And what I found really interesting was in the very first few pages, you talked about the symbolism of money. And I took out a dollar bill, and it was fascinating what that symbolism represented. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about that symbolism on the dollar bill?
Sure, I'd love to. So, first of all, money is in and of itself a very deeply symbolic tool and resource, and we often don't think about how symbolic it is, but if you just look on the dollar bill itself, you know, you have, first of all, this the saying which says, "In God we trust," which is very interesting in and of itself because essentially I believe that when our forefathers were founding this country, and looking at, you know, this whole idea of capitalism and democracy and all of that, that to a great extent they didn't know what they were doing. And so they kind of just said, you know, we're going to put this in the hands of God. And we don't really know how we're going to make this whole economic reality work. So even though we do have a thing of separation of church and state, our money implicitly applies that kind of left it up to God. Trusting God that it's all going to be okay. And then, of course, you have the I'm sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, what I was curious about was I thought you, I read in your book that what was on the dollar bill changed in 1971. Did I read that right?
Right. So that's prior to the shift from the gold standard, which our money used to be based upon. We became a fiat currency with the Nixon administration, and our money is no longer based upon anything. And it is now simply a fiat currency in which it's completely based upon the faith and trust of the people in the underlying currency. In other words, it's not real. Our money is not real. It is a belief system, which is kind of a really crazy thing to think about. And that's one of the reasons why we also know money is deeply symbolic, because it is entirely now not based upon gold or any other standard. You cannot, it does not say any longer, redeemable to the bearer upon demand. Now it basically says, in God we trust. And so this
is that new? That's what I was curious about.
Societal agreement.
In God we trust, is that new language? When they went off the gold standard, is that new on the dollar bill? That wasn't there before.
You know, I'm trying to remember my research, because it was been a while since I think 15 years, but I believe that in God we trust replaced redeemable to the bearer on demand.
Uh huh. Yeah, because I wasn't sure about it. I thought that was what your book said, and which would mean that now the dollar bill looks today, the dollar bill would look different than the dollar bill before 1971. I thought it was kind of interesting, that whole. I mean,
actually,
I really was.
It was 1956 that they changed it to "In God
uh-huh.
We Trust."
Okay, that's interesting.
So that happened a bit earlier.
Uh huh. So what about you say this belief system, and I think in a way. Everything's a belief system, don't you think?
Absolutely. Our entire society
system.
Is based upon a belief system. And
about everything almost.
Yeah, it prescribed norms and rules, and, you know, this is the fabric of our society until people decide they don't believe it in anymore. So, for example, when the fall of Russia happened, their currency, which had become so significantly devalued, was being used as napkins because there was no longer any belief in it. And I think we need to really be careful because, you know, for us to ever believe that it couldn't happen to us, especially given the circumstances of our world today, it's plausible, right? I mean, we have to hope and work toward nothing like that happening, but if it could
right.
happen anywhere, it could happen here or any place else, right?
So essentially what you're about, Money Coaching Institute and your book, it's really about how to have a healthier relationship with money. And so why don't you tell us about how we can change, how you see our relationship with money and what we can do to change it?
Well, first of all, our individual relationship with money is largely subconsciously driven. And so a lot of my work is based upon a lot of research from the fields of neuroscience and neuroeconomics, behavioral finance, and there is truly a science to understanding people and money to a great extent that's not largely known. And so if you can imagine that we all come in with this wonderful human brain and all the potential that represents, and it's not unlike the operating system of your computer, you know, you've got that nice clean hard drive, and then we start
right.
loading programs, right? So as we start
mm-hmm.
loading those programs through our family of origin, we're not as children aware that that's happening. But if you think about a child's brain, it's literally a recording device. It's recording everything that's going on because that's how we learn. That's how it's designed. The challenge is that we're recording a lot of things that are confusing challenging in our environments. You know, there's financial scarcity. There are, you know, money is a core survival issue, so it's a very triggering and emotional subject. So as we begin to download more and more of these programs, many of them are a bit infected at times, not unlike when you download stuff onto your computer and it creates a problem. So because all of that is being filed into the deep archives of the subconscious, as children, we don't even know what's going on until we move out of the home and we start having our own money and our own experience. And next thing we know, we're starting to manifest these behaviors, which were kind of just lying in wait. And so if you came from a family where you were taught and trained how to be with money and your parents modeled well, and you have a very strong foundation and you felt very safe, your chances are you're going to do well with money. The problem is, Mark, as you probably already know, that's not what is for most people, because money is a taboo subject, right?
It is.
So we don't train, we don't educate.
People.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, it was not a safe conversation. It's not nice to talk about money. Don't ask people that, etc. So we're bringing in a lot that unfortunately creates some challenges that are driving us subconsciously to sabotage ourselves or to be emotionally reactive. And some of this is also brain dynamic driven. You know, we have an old instinctive brain that's wired for survival. It's really reactive. It's also wired for desire, so it tends to make us human wantings. And then we have this very large, you know, filing system that's filled with a lot of emotional memories, patterns, and behaviors that we're just not aware of. And until we do the work and start to bring that to the surface and start to name those dynamics, we're relatively powerless to change it.
Right. And you, in your book, and I know from talking to you before, you break it down into 8 archetypes about a relationship with money. And what I was thinking about is if you can maybe briefly talk about the different archetypes and look at how we can use them and how that knowledge really help us have a healthier relationship with money.
Yeah, well, the archetypes
are... So,
are
you ready for that?
I'm sorry?
Are you ready for that?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
How about, can you hear
sure
me now better?
Yeah, I can.
All right, good.
So speaking about the archetypes, they're really not your personality. So archetypes represents, again, patterns and behaviors that are largely subconsciously driven, right? So all of the archetypes have their own distinct way of being. And, you know, Mark, you and I did a lot of work together, and you're a really strong warrior magician, right?
Yes.
And
from
essentially
from your
what
system
that means.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so and that means?
So the warrior is the archetype of action. It's the archetype that you want to be driving the car relative to money, because the warrior is very determined and focused and they're driven. They're also usually really loyal and very capable. They're usually one of the more successful of the money types. And mostly it's because they're really committed to right action. And they know what they need to do, and they're somebody who's pretty proactively oriented where money is concerned. But they also have a fairly big heart, so occasionally they might be rescuers of others. But they usually have pretty good boundaries overall. And then the magician archetype is sort of an amalgam in that it represents the best of or the light aspects of the other archetypes and some additional sort of qualities and characteristics. So we see the warrior is the archetype of the material world, so it's about mastery in the material world, whereas the magician is the archetype of the inner or spiritual world. So the combination of the two helps us to know that part of our task here as human beings is to be more integrated. So people tend to either be, you know, one or the other. But we need to actually take both sides of the coin to heart. You know, part of our task is to master the material world because that is where we live, and part of our task is to begin to master and be grounded in the fact that this isn't all there is, and to have this sense of faith, trust, and balance in all things, that if you do the right things for the right reasons consistently, you're going to get the best possible results. So my model is about integration, and then those other archetypes represent some of the challenges. So like every archetype, there are shadows and light and degrees of that. So would you like me just to go through the archetypes completely?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we have about 10 more minutes.
Yeah.
So
the innocence is how we all start out. Thank you.
Go ahead.
The innocence is how we all start out. They're the more dependent. They often don't feel very empowered around money. They can be have a lot of anxiety and fear because they just don't feel as capable, so they kind of take the head in the sand approach. I'm giving you very brief descriptions.
Right.
Sometimes when we're the innocent and we're not paying attention or we give our power away, we can then become victimized. So the victim, unfortunately, is very alive in the world today, where we just feel like a lot's been done to us and there's a lot of blame and projection. The victim often has difficulty getting beyond the past circumstances, and they can often have a self-fulfilling prophecy. And
so we have the innocent, the innocent, and then the victim.
That's right. The warrior, we've already talked about. And then the martyr is often somebody who has tremendous compassion and wisdom. They tend to lead from their heart. They'll tend to be very generous, sometimes generous with strings attached. They can be sort of have an addiction to suffering, and they tend to be very big self-sacrificers. But overall, they're sort of the bodhisattva archetype in some ways because they really do have usually a greater purpose and are kind of a stand for the suffering. That's the term martyr. And then we have the fool, which is sort of the wild card of archetypes because the fool is, you know, Joseph Campbell would say the fool and the magician are very similar in that, you know, the fool, as a result of being willing to take risks, sometimes really hits a home run. The challenge with the fool archetype relative to money is they tend to suffer from a feast or famine dynamic. They're a little too impulsive. Excuse me?
Yes, go ahead. Hello.
And so sometimes they do win. They have great capacity. It's just that they often are short-sighted and don't do the research, and therefore there are some consequences. And then we have the creator artist, or the archetype that tends to be a little more conflicted about money. They're really more about some greater purpose or their creativity. They're inventors, they're innovators, they're really a very wonderful archetype. But because they have a lot of inner conflict about money and usually woundedness, they can have a very distinct love-hate relationship with money. And so the goal for the creator artist is to learn to be more integrated in both worlds, and when they do that, they can be very powerful. And then we have the tyrant. And pretty much I think we all know the tyrant archetype. All you have to do is turn on the TV today.
Exactly.
The tyrant, you know, from chronic not enoughness is never going to be enough.
Can't get away from it, right?
Exactly. It's just challenging. I almost don't want to turn on the TV or radio or anything. So the tyrant really...
Let me just interject real quick. I want to let our
listeners
know that you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. My guest today is Deborah Price. She has the Money Coaching Institute, and her book is Money Magic, and I recommend it. It's enlightening. It's interesting. How do people find you, and how do people get your book?
So probably the easiest place to get my book is either on Amazon, or you can contact my publisher at New World Library. And you can reach me on my website at www.moneycoachinginstitute.com.
All right. Good. And so you started to talk a little bit about the tyrant before we put in the blog.
Right, and the tyrant is important to try to understand because usually the tyrant has their own wounds that they have never healed, and therefore these wounds are starting to become very shadowy aspects. So the tyrant believes that money and power are, and control are the only things that will save them and the only things that matter. And they're, for somebody whose tyrant is very, very high, there's very little they won't stop at in order to get more money, power, and control, because they have the woundedness and the shadow is driving that archetype. So, you know, we can all have aspects of these archetypes because they exist in the collective unconscious. They, you know, we all have each of these aspects inside of us. It's really just a question of who has the most speaking parts, who's really driving the show. And when the tyrant is driving the show, they're very much oppressors, and there's sort of an underlying narcissism associated with the tyrant in that their own agenda, which is about power, control, domination, and money, is, you know, it's like the hungry monster and there's not an end to it. It's just a vacuous hole of which, unfortunately, much can go wrong, right? Unfortunately, on the other side of the tyrant is that they're usually terrified, because if you really look at what they're trying to cover up, underneath that is a lot of pain and suffering. But they haven't gained access to that, and therefore it becomes shadowy and demonstrated in some really negative and horrible ways.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question. What would you say to the listener? They've been taken in this information, and if somebody said, I want to change my relationship to money, what would you suggest? Because we're, you know, obviously read your book, talk to you, but is there like one or two ideas that you could share that will kind of help the listener?
Yeah, well, here's a quick thing that you can all do is hop on the Money Coaching Institute's website and take the money type quiz. It's free, and it'll give you an overview of your own archetypes, you know, what's active for you now and what's maybe passively hiding in the background, and a bit of a synopsis of what that means. And then that gives you sort of a perspective, and you can look at that and go, okay, so what does this mean? You know, none of these in the end are fixed. They're not your personality. They're behaviors. And to the extent that you become conscious and aware and committed to transforming any aspect of you, we all have that power within us. So my experience is that a minute that a person becomes conscious and aware that something is no longer working and that they need to shift that and become committed to it, that's the beginning. That's 50% of the journey. So if it's not where you want it to be, just make a commitment to doing the work and to looking at, you know, read the book, do those exercises, start to explore and see how much comes up and what you can learn about yourself just independently. And if you need help and support, like anything, get some help and support. I've got probably 600 coaches in the world now, and we're here. So it is a very, very important journey because money impacts every aspect of our life. And it's time that we started to get in right relationship with it. So that's what I hold for everybody.
Okay. Thank you for that. The other thing is I'd like to ask my guest is the show is the Inspire Possibility Show. So right now, what inspires you?
You know, I'm very inspired to work with young people today. Millennials are getting a bad rap, and I don't think it's well-deserved, and I don't like what I hear going on. And they're inheriting a very challenging world. So I'm very inspired to work with young people, millennials. I'm also very inspired to work with young couples who may be in struggle and they don't really have the help and support that they need. I'm working with a young couple right now that I just adore. And to see the light bulb go on and to see them realizing that this is something they can do, and to also help them to do better so that collectively their families can do better. So all of that inspires me. People inspire me. People are my religion.
And relationships, right? People and relationships.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's the best part of life. You know, money, it's great. It comes and goes. But people are what really matters. And we have to remember that.
So what gives you hope?
The same thing. People give me
same
hope.
Same thing.
People.
So in this time of uncertainty, what would you have? Do you have any advice for people in their relationship to money?
I think the thing is that we have to begin to rethink our personal economic models, and rather than the prescribed life of, you know, you go to work, you make money, you buy a bunch of stuff that you may or may not need, and we become really unconscious consumers. And we look outside at what everybody else has and believe that we're supposed to have that too. And I think that this model is not serving us in some very important ways, and that we keep working harder and harder, and in the end we have less life and less living and less fulfillment. And we need to course correct and refocus on our, you know, what really matters and what our true values are and what it is we really want to create. And money is part of it, but it should be like the dessert. It shouldn't be the whole meal, because that does not tend to make very happy humans, in my experience. So I'm not saying money's bad or that you shouldn't have some. I'm really an advocate that people have more balance and with an eye toward a greater, more fulfilling life.
Mm-hmm. So more balance, more meaning, and to start to really look at our relationship to money and what motivates us. And ideally, I was going to say, for you, since you're big on feeling relationships are the most important thing, it's really about one of the relationships, a relationship to money, but sometimes that interferes with our relationship to each other.
Oh, I see it all the time when I work with couples, that the relationship to money that they have together is often, as it deteriorates, so goes the intimacy in all levels. And then the goodwill and what started out to be a wonderful, loving relationship starts to collapse because they didn't figure out how to do money together. And many of the patterns that we take into relationship, we're not even conscious about how they get triggered in our primary relationships and then start to devolve. So, you know, all of these things can be solved if we approach them from the right mind and with the right heart, and with the intent to have understanding and compassion for our partner. But you know, what happens is it's just such a challenging, heated, triggering conversation that people don't do it well. And that's part of what I do, is help people learn to come together from a very different perspective and learn to communicate about money in a healthy way and understand each other's triggers and patterns, and then resolve those with clear agreement.
Well, thank you, Deborah Price, for being the guest on the Aspire Possibility Show and for the work you do in the world. And I know you've helped a lot of people, made a big difference in your work, and you've been doing this for a long time. It isn't something that you're new at. You've been really sharing your wisdom on about money for many, many years. I encourage our readers to get a copy of Money Magic. I've read most of it, and it's a great book, and I think you'll get a lot from it. And again, thank you, Deborah, for the work you've been doing and in the world, and your commitment and your determination. And so thanks again for being our guest.
Thank you, Mark, and also for the work that you're doing in your show. I really appreciate it, and I wish you all well. So, blessings, everyone.
Thank you. And until next week, when we have another interesting, enlightening guest, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.